Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald Review dated March 1st, 2016. We'll begin this portion of the broadcast with a reading of the obituaries. Sharon L. Poling Falks, 75, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, February 26th, at Decatur Rehabilitations and Medical and Health Care Center. A memorial service to celebrate Sharon's life will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, March 3rd, at Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until service time. Sharon will be laid to rest at Macon County Memorial Park in Harristown, Illinois. Memorials can be made to the family. Mr. C. Tom Larson passed away Sunday, February 28th, at his home in Nokomis. Tom was born and lived in the same home all his life. Services will be held Wednesday, March 2nd at 10 a.m. at Steele Dawson Funeral Home in Nokomis, with Father Dan Willenborg officiating. Visitation will be held Tuesday evening at the funeral home, 5 to 7 p.m. That's this evening. Memorials can be made to St. Louis Catholic School and St. Jude's Hospital. Lucille Estella Moore Rolofson passed from this mortal life to her eternal home on Saturday, February 27th, at 9:30 a.m. She was 99 years, 7 months, and 5 days old. Visitation will be at the Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, Friday, March 4th, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., and 1 hour before a special service of thanksgiving and worship to honor her at 10 a.m., March 5th, 2016, at First Baptist Church, 220 Illini Drive, Clinton, Illinois, with Pastor John Roberson officiating. Burial will be in DeLand Cemetery, DeLand, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the missionary fund at her church or the donor's choice. We don't often read news of celebrities' deaths, but here I think is one that might interest us. George Kennedy, the hulking tough guy character actor who won an Academy Award for his portrayal of a savage chain gang convict in the 1960s classic Cool Hand Luke, has died. His grandson, Corey Schenkel, said Kennedy died Sunday morning of old age in Boise, Idaho. He was 91. He had undergone emergency triple bypass surgery in 2002. That same year, he and his late wife moved to Idaho to be closer to their daughter and her family, though he still was involved in occasional film projects. His biggest acting achievement came in Cool Hand Luke, a 1967 film about a rebellious war hero played by Paul Newman, who is bent on bucking the system as a prisoner on a southern chain gang. Kennedy played the role of Dragline, the chain gang boss, who goes from Luke's number one nemesis to his biggest disciple as Newman's character takes on folk hero status among fellow inmates. The movie garnered 4 Academy Award nominations, and Kennedy was named Best Supporting Actor. After the critical commercial success of Cool Hand Luke, Kennedy carved out a niche as one of Hollywood's most recognizable supporting actors. He had parts in several action flicks in the 1970s and played Leslie Nielsen's sidekick in the Naked Gun spoofs. One of his strongest supporting roles was in the hit 1970 film Airport, which spurred the run of 1970s disaster pictures. Kennedy played Joe Petroni, a no-nonsense, cigar-chomping troubleshooter who stubbornly guides a jetliner stuck on a snow-clogged runway out of harm's way. So that's George Kennedy. We turn now to our letters to Dear Abby. Here's the first. Dear Abby, I'm 39 and 7 months pregnant with my husband's only child. Since becoming pregnant, I have become somewhat withdrawn due to depression. My doctor prescribed Paxil, but my husband won't allow me to take it. I don't leave the house unless I absolutely need to because he accuses me of cheating on him daily. 2 nights ago, he took a single female friend out to dinner, and they were gone for 5 hours. It hurt my feelings because, in my view, it was disrespectful on both their parts. When they got back, I was sitting outside, and she wouldn't even come to say goodbye to me. When I asked my husband why I hadn't been invited, he said, "Neither of us wanted you there." In his eyes, he has done nothing wrong. He tells me I'm crazy and I need mental help. Am I wrong for being so upset? And she signs her letter, "Not Crazy in Texas." Here's Abby's reply. "Dear Not Crazy, not at all. It appears you are married to a controlling, emotionally abusive man who may be cheating on you. One of the hallmarks of philanderers is that they will accuse the innocent partner of cheating. Feeling depressed during a pregnancy under these circumstances isn't surprising. If you felt any other way, you wouldn't be normal. That your doctor would prescribe an antidepressant and your husband would, quote, not allow you to take it, is alarming. If you have close friends and family, I urge you to tell them what's going on. And while you're at it, contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline because you may need help to get safely away. The phone number is 1-800-799-7233. And she gives a website, thehotline.org. Here's the next letter. Dear Abby, I currently live in a situation where my brother, our two kids, and I, I currently live in a situation where my husband, our two kids, and I share a home with my parents, two sisters, and younger brother. Sometimes it seems crowded because there is no privacy and a lack of respect. Lately, I'm having a problem with my sister. Despite the fact that she and my family share the upstairs level of the home, she continues to walk around nude or in her undergarments throughout the day because she, quote, hates wearing clothes. At various times, my family members and I have had uncomfortable encounters with her over this. I have talked to her about it repeatedly, but she refuses to cooperate. I think it's rude, inconsiderate, and inappropriate, not to mention a completely avoidable problem. What do you think? Am I wrong for being upset that her behavior doesn't change and the message doesn't seem to get through to her? And the letter is signed, Clothes-Minded. Dear Clothes-Minded, I agree that your sister's behavior is inappropriate. She should not be parading around in a state of undress in front of your husband and children. Because she's chosen to ignore your requests, enlist the help of your parents to get the message across to her. It's their roof that she's under, and perhaps they will have better luck. Here's a brief letter to Dr. Roach that may be of interest. Dear Dr. Roach, will a blood test reveal deficiency in levels of vitamins D and C, magnesium, CoQ10, etc.? And here's his answer. Vitamin levels can be measured in the blood, but it is seldom necessary to do so. There are some exceptions. Vitamin D remains controversial, with most experts recommending checking vitamin D levels in people at risk for deficiency, including dark-skinned individuals, those who seldom get sun exposure, and people who take medications that interfere with vitamin D, or who do not absorb it properly, such as those with SPRU or inflammatory bowel disease. Many experts recommend vitamin D supplementation in healthy older adults, but it is still not clear whether this is necessary. Vitamin C is rarely deficient from diet, scurvy, but it can be seen in cases of severe malabsorption. CoQ10 is almost never measured outside of research settings. Magnesium deficiency is common in people taking diuretics. In general, vitamin blood levels are not necessary to check in healthy people. With the possible exception of vitamin D, most people have a healthy diet. With a healthy diet, do not need vitamin supplementation. Taking a look at the opinions page, we find this letter to the editor written by Gary Minnick. The headline is Competing Political Ads, Amusing and Incorrect. And here's the letter. I find the ad war in the 15th Congressional District hilariously entertaining. The competing ads, which usually run back-to-back on area stations, pit State Senator Kyle McCarter against longtime Republican Representative John Shimkus. The pro-Shimkus ad calls McCarter, who has never served in Washington, an insider, which is quite a charge from someone seeking his 11th term in Congress. The pro-McCarter ad is no less amusing, painting Shimkus as a liberal of all things. Yeah, right. Shimkus has aligned himself with every wingnut position available, from denying that human activities have anything to do with climate change, to doubting evolution and apparently believing the Bible is a science textbook. These ads would be funny, except that one of these guys probably will be sent to Washington in January, and that's a pity. Letter written by Gary Minnick of Decatur. On the same page, there's this interesting column written by Leonard Pitts, and his title is What It Means to Be Black. He begins this way. Today's column is for the benefit of one Dr. Benjamin Solomon Carson. He shouldn't need what follows, but obviously does. No other conclusion is possible after his interview with Politico a few days ago. The subject was Barack Obama and what the Republican presidential contender sees as the inferior quality of the president's blackness. Quote, he's an African American, said Carson. He was, you know, raised white. I mean, like most Americans. I was proud that we broke the color barrier when he was elected, but he didn't grow up like I grew up. Carson, the son of a struggling single mother who raised him in Detroit and sometimes relied on food stamps to do so, noted that Obama, by contrast, spent part of his childhood in Indonesia. So for him, this is quoting Carson, so for him to claim that he identifies with the experience of black Americans, I think is a bit of a stretch, end quote. Lord have mercy. Let's not even get into the fact that the man questioning Obama's racial bona fides once stood before an audience of white conservatives and proclaimed the Affordable Care Act, quote, the worst thing that has happened in this country since slavery, end quote. Let's deal instead with Carson's implicit assertion that to be authentically black requires being fatherless and broke, scrabbling for subsistence in the hood. If a white man said that, we'd call it racist. And guess what? It's also racist when a black man says it. Not to mention self-hating and self-limiting. Carson denies the very depth and breadth of African-American life. By his logic, Kobe Bryant, who grew up in Italy, is not black. Shaquille O'Neal, who spent part of his childhood in Germany, is not black. Miles Davis and Natalie Cole, who grew up in affluent households, were not black. And Martin Luther King Jr., child of middle-class comfort and an intact family, was not black. According to him, they were, quote, all raised white. Here's what Carson doesn't get. What we call race is not about neighborhood, class, or family status. Though the African hostages upon whose backs this country was built shared certain common approaches to music, faith, and art, race ultimately isn't even about culture. Martin Luther King, for instance, was an opera buff. It's hard to get further from black culture than Lucia de Lammermoor, an opera that I can't pronounce. No, race is something Europeans invented as a tool of subjugation. The people who came here from England, France, and Spain did not initially see themselves as white, after all. They declared themselves white, that is, a superior species of humanity, to justify in their own consciences the evil things they did to the people they took from Africa. Similarly, those Africans knew nothing about black. They saw themselves as Fulani, Mande, Mandinkan, or Songhe. Black was an identity forced upon them with every bite of the lash and rattle of the chains. In other words, to be black is not to share a common geography, class, or family status, but rather the common experience of being insulted, bullied, and oppressed by people who think they are white. Want to know if you're black? Try to rent a house in Miami. Try to hail a cab in Times Square. Try to win an Oscar in Hollywood. You'll find out real quick. And there is something spectacularly absurd in the fact of Barack Obama being criticized as not black by a Republican. Think about it. In the unlikely event he somehow managed to live the 47 years before his presidency without being insulted, bullied, and oppressed by people who think they are white, Obama has sure made up for it since. Members of Carson's party have called him boy, uppity, and ape, and have gone to extraordinary and unprecedented lengths to block him from doing anything. So the good doctor can relax. If Obama wasn't black before, he certainly is now. And this column was written by Leonard Pitts, who I believe is a columnist for the Miami Herald. Here's an article I've often thought of before. What's normal memory loss versus dementia? We may often joke about it, but getting older does often mean an increase in forgetfulness and a general slowing down. It's totally normal and to be expected. However, some levels of memory loss can point to more serious problems, including early signs of dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Knowing the most common warning signs of dementia and Alzheimer's disease can not only help you detect real problems earlier, but can help you feel more at ease when you realize certain occurrences are normal and not so worrisome. As with any disease, it's better to err on the side of caution and let your doctor know if you are concerned with any actions or developments in your or your loved one's actions. Even if you find yourself facing a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease or dementia, it's better than not knowing and facing a more serious case later in life. Knowing about a diagnosis can help you not only make more decisions for yourself and your future, but can help potentially preserve quality of life for longer. Below are examples of normal aging versus potential signs of dementia that can help you know when you should bring your concerns to your doctor. We encourage you to share this infographic on Facebook and your website if you prefer to. This is some other information about websites. Okay, I'll read as many of this as I have time. Normal behavior, forgetting a person's name or a word during a conversation, but remembering it later. Concerning is losing oneself in a conversation, stopping abruptly and forgetting what to say next, repeating oneself often. Normal, forgetting an appointment from time to time. Concerning, forgetting recently learned information, or having to ask for information over and over. Increasingly having to rely on devices or loved ones to help remember to complete tasks previously handled on your own. Normal, forgetting what day it is occasionally, but figuring it out later. Concerning, completely losing track of the season or the day, or even forgetting where one is or how he or she has got there. Normal, getting irritated when one's normal routine is altered. Concerning, getting extremely agitated when something in daily life changes, especially when the agitation is a noticeable departure from one's typical personality. Normal, making bad decisions occasionally when it comes to money. Concerning, consistently exhibiting poor decision-making abilities, such as giving away large amounts of money to telemarketers. Normal, feeling tired or worn out from time to time and wanting to stay home to rest. Concerning, removing oneself from favorite hobbies or activities because of forgetfulness or difficulty completing. Becoming more isolated and not wanting to venture out of the comfort of one's home. Normal, losing an item occasionally. Concerning, putting items in strange places and not being able to retrace one's steps to find the missing items. Normal, vision changes due to cataracts or needing a new prescription for your glasses. Concerning, increased difficulty in vision when it comes to understanding what one is seeing, such as understanding color or contrast, making it difficult to travel or conduct daily life. The following article is about palliative care. Have you ever felt like our culture's approach to health care is too narrow? Study after study has demonstrated that many of the health problems people in our country face aren't purely about biology or genetics. They're often tied to more emotional issues like stress or depression. With a growing body of evidence showing that treating physical ailments is only a partial solution, Many healthcare professionals are beginning to embrace the idea of making sure patients get a fuller treatment plan. Palliative care aims to make sure emotional components are addressed as well as physical ones in the care that patients of serious illnesses receive. The Mayo Clinic defines palliative care as offering pain and symptom management and emotional and spiritual support when you face a chronic, debilitating, or life-threatening illness. It's a healthcare program designed to ensure that all of a patient's needs are met when going through the many difficulties that rise with a serious illness. In most healthcare cases, your care likely starts and stops with the doctors and other hospital staff that treat you. Palliative care involves a team approach. You'd still work with your doctors and nurses, but added to the mix would be any other relevant specialists that can help, such as therapists, nutritionists, social workers, and even clergy members. Your doctors are there to help you determine what treatment you need, while your team is there to help you get through the treatment, as well as the day-to-day. They can help recognize signs of depression and swoop in to help you deal with them in healthy ways. They can help you with techniques for dealing with chronic pain, like meditation, and or the appropriate exercises. They can help with all that in-between stuff that people suffering from serious illnesses deal with that doctors aren't equipped to handle. If palliative care sounds like something you or a loved one could use, then the first step is to talk to your doctor. Most doctors are familiar with palliative care and will be able to offer you a referral to receive palliative care in your area. Most health insurance plans actually cover palliative care, so in most cases, getting a referral from your doctor will mean it comes at minimal cost to you. The next step is to find your palliative care team. Your doctor may have good recommendations, or you can also check a provider directory. Palliative care doesn't work miracles. Both the patient and their family will still have moments of stress, anger, or despair, and will have to do the work to move past them. What it can provide is the help of professionals trained in techniques and practices that address those feelings. The end result can be significant and leave families feeling much more in control of a difficult situation. This has been Carol Bond with the March 1st reading of the Decatur Herald and Review. I very much look forward to reading with you again next week.